You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap.
Here's the pitch. A curveball!
It's time to tap the keg with Lane Grindle.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 213 of Brewers on Tap. Lane Grindle with you as always. And boy, we got an exciting week on the horizon for the Brewers. Magic number to clinch a postseason berth is sitting at 4. Magic number to clinch the division, which is where the eyes are for the Brewers right now, sits at 5. No longer are you paying as close of attention to the Cincinnati Reds number. You're looking at the St. Louis Cardinals. They've leapfrogged the Reds, and the Cardinals are doing what the Cardinals seem to do in August and September every single year. They've gotten hot, and they put themselves right in the middle of that postseason conversation. So the magic number over the Cardinals is what you're paying the closest attention to, and that number's 5 right now. The earliest the Brewers could clinch the division would be potentially on Sunday. If they would sweep the Cubs on Sunday, and if the Cardinals would lose at least a pair of games in their series over the weekend, well, then the Brewers would be in position to win the division again, potentially on Sunday. Now, if they don't get it done through this weekend, and if it carries over into the next week, well, that's good news for the Brewers because they play the Cardinals Monday through Thursday of next week, and so each game is worth 2 in that regard. So there's a pretty good chance the Brewers in the next week are going to be celebrating the NL Central crown in some way, shape, or form. By the way, the Cardinals this weekend have the Padres, so that's a huge series in terms of wild card implications. Well, it's been a really fun week. Since we last talked to you, the Brewers, of course, threw a no-hitter. Corbin Burns and Josh Hader combining 8 from Burns, 1 from Hader. Omar Narvaez behind the plate. Spectacular play by Lorenzo Cain to end the 8th inning in right center field. It had everything you would have wanted from a no-hitter. Just the 2nd in Brewers history and the 1st one in 34 years for the crew. There's a lot of numbers that we can dive into, whether it be just this Brewers starting rotation in general or Corbin Burns and what he's been able to do specifically. We are going to look at the case for Corbin Burns as the National League Cy Young Award winner coming up in Sabermetrics 101, so you're going to want to listen to that. We're also going to play the highlights of that no-hitter for you as well here in the podcast, and we're going to talk to Corbin Burns on the podcast, so it's going to have everything coming your way on this edition of Brewers on Tap. We're going to really celebrate that no-hitter because it took 34 years to get the 2nd one. We waited long enough for it. We're going to enjoy it. We're going to talk about it. It's a lot of fun. Brewers sitting at 89 wins, so the next one gets them number 90, which is a big deal. The Brewers are going to celebrate winning 90 games because that's a really hard thing to do in baseball, and the Brewers have kind of made a little bit of a habit out of it over the last couple of years. Of course, they won 96 in 2018. They were at 89 in 2019. Last year, nobody had a chance to win 90 games because there's only 60 games played, and this year they're going to get to 90 wins yet again. The 4th best record in baseball right now for the Brewers. They will be the 4th team to get to 90 wins in Major League Baseball once they get that number achieved. Brewers right now on pace for 99 wins. That would break the record for the franchise. The record is 96. The 11 team did it, and the 18 team did it in 163 games. 163, that was the 96th win that year. They won 95 through 162. Brewers got the Cubs this weekend, then as we told you, the Cardinals, and then they go on the road as well. After a weekend series with the Mets at home, they go back on the road, face the Cardinals and the Dodgers, and that's how this season will end up for the crew. You got Hauser on the mound on Friday night. Burns is going to go on Saturday night, and then Eric Lauer is going to go on Sunday for the Brewers. All right, let's jump into Sabermetrics 101 as we take a look at the candidacy for Corbin Burns as the NL Cy Young.
Let's crunch the numbers in Sabermetrics 101.
All right, as you look at Corbin Burns' candidacy for NL Cy Young, most of the experts seem to believe this is currently a two-person race between Corbin Burns and Max Scherzer for the NL Cy Young. Now, there's a couple of other names that could factor into that mix. At one point, Brandon Woodruff was squarely in it. At one point, Freddie Peralta was squarely in it. Zach Wheeler has put together a great year. Certainly, Walker Buehler, the teammate of Max Scherzer with the Dodgers, could probably put himself into that conversation. But for all intents and purposes, this comes down to two guys. It comes down to Corbin Burns and Max Scherzer. And there's all sorts of different metrics that you can look at to stack these two up in terms of their value. In terms of war for pitchers, according to Baseball Reference, Scherzer has the edge, but barely. 6.0 war. Buehler has 5.8 war. Burns has 5.3 war. Woodruff has 5.2 war. Kevin Gausman at one point was in this conversation, but he has faded down the stretch here in the second half for the San Francisco Giants in terms of being in the NL Cy Young conversation. So, Baseball Reference and their version of war certainly gives the lead or the consideration to Max Scherzer there. He would own that category in that regard. Now, there's other versions of war, which is confusing for all of us, of course, but there is other versions of war that show our guy, Corbin Burns, leading in terms of war. So it depends on what you value and how you want to calculate it, but Corbin Burns is definitely in that conversation. Because look, if you go to Fangraphs, Corbin Burns is the number one pitcher in the National League according to war. He has a primary war of 7.1 and a total war of 7.2. And when you start looking at, where does Scherzer come in on that? He's at 5.2 and 4.5, according to Fangraphs. So it kind of depends on what you value and where you're going in terms of war. I think the more easy to digest numbers are the ones we've traditionally grown accustomed to. Now, a lot of people will say that earned run average is not an accurate way to value a pitcher. I still think it is. I still like it. I don't think that there's any bonus points for dismissing earned run average. I think it still has value, and it still has a lot to do with how we perceive a pitcher is pitching. And Scherzer does lead in that category, 2.17 ERA. Burns right behind him with a 2.25. That is close enough that one bad outing from Scherzer, a couple more brilliant outings from Burns, and that could flip still before it's all said and done. So that is certainly, within the margin for error right now in terms of earned run average. Those are the top two ERAs in all of baseball. Wins, I will say, don't matter. I don't think that very many people look at wins. You get to 20 wins, somebody's going to pay attention to it, but it's not a slam dunk that means you're going to win the Cy Young. And for the most part, wins, especially with the way the game is managed now, not probably going to have a big part in this conversation of who should get the NL Cy Young. Walks and hits per innings pitched, very close again. Scherzer, 0.82, Burns, 0.91 in that category. Again, the top two in baseball from that standpoint. Hits per nine innings, Scherzer's number one at 5.5. Burns is number four at 6.5, right behind his teammate Brandon Woodruff at 6.4. And how about this for if somehow the Brewers and Dodgers got locked into a series, and there's a lot that would have to happen for that to take place. One, the Dodgers likely, if they don't win the West, would have to win a wild card. Then they'd have to win their divisional series in the West also to get to the NLCS before the Brewers would face them. So a lot would have to happen, and the Brewers would have to win their divisional series against what looks like the Atlanta Braves in order to face the Dodgers. So there's a lot of obstacles that have to be cleared before these two teams would lock up in the NLCS like they did in 18. But the top four pitchers in baseball in terms of hits allowed per nine innings, Scherzer, Buehler, Woodruff, Burns. You think offense is going to be stingy in that series, even though you have some great position players and some great hitters between those two teams. So there you have that statistic. Bases on balls per nine innings pitched. Walks per nine, essentially. Burns is second behind Nathan Eovaldi. He's right in front of Scherzer, who's third, 1.7 to 1.83. Innings pitched is where Scherzer certainly has the advantage, it would appear, over Burns. Neither guy in the top 10 in terms of innings pitched. And that's pretty understandable. Here's where I think Burns has a big argument. Strikeouts per nine innings. He's number one, 12.4 strikeouts per nine innings. Think about that. Scherzer's right up there too. He's third with 12.167 strikeouts per nine innings. They are fourth and fifth in the terms of overall strikeouts. And yet again, remember, they're not in the top 10 in innings pitched, either of them. Scherzer's fourth with 219 strikeouts. Burns is fifth with 210 overall strikeouts. So, you know, there's just a lot here that you like. Of course, in terms of strikeouts per walks, Burns blows away the competition, 7.2. But who's number two in baseball? It's Scherzer, 6.6. You get the point. These two guys are near the top of every statistical category. And this is going to be a really close call, I think, for the voters between these two when it comes to the NL Cy Young. Burns gives up the least hard contact. He's giving up just 0.296 home runs per nine innings pitched. Now, Scherzer is not in the top 10 in that category. And I do think in today's baseball, that works. That plays very well for Burns in the conversation. Adjusted ERA plus, if you want to get into the bigger numbers in terms of analytical approach to this, Burns is number one, 188. Scherzer's number two at 186. I mean, they are just close in everything. The one that I think I put a lot of value in is fielding independent pitching. It really tells the story of just how dominant the starting pitcher has been, with defense not really included. You kind of subtract the defense out of the equation. It's just isolated on how is this guy pitching. Burns is number one in a landslide, a 1.50 number for fielding independent pitching, which is basically the ERA if you take the defense out of it. Scherzer is five at 286. So he's been helped by his defense. Burns, not that he's been hurt by his defense, but it's just that dominant, that he has been that good even without his defense. It's really incredible. The numbers for Burns, just you keep going through all of it, and he grades out right near the top. But again, I think Max Scherzer's going to be right there too. And so it's going to be very interesting to see who ends up winning the NL Cy Young.
0-2 on Bradley. There's a swing and a miss. Strikeout number 200 on the season for Corbin Burns. Two balls, two strikes. Not Franmil Reyes. Curveball. Got him looking. Strikeout number 10 for Corbin Burns. The last three in a row have all been looking, whereas the first seven were all swinging. The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Narvaez applies the tag, and it is a baker's dozen for Corbin Burns. 13 strikeouts through seven no-hit innings here in Cleveland tonight.
Miller, the only hitter in the lineup that has not struck out tonight, the 1-1.
Swing and a line drive right center field. Kane made the catch! Oh, what a play by Lorenzo Kane in right center. A headlong dive. And he preserves the no-hitter through eight innings. There's always one play that you'll always remember in the special nights. That one was it from Lorenzo Kane. A strike away for Burns and Hader, trying to finish it off here in Cleveland. Hader ready to work. He's at the belt. Here's the stretch. The 1-2. A swing and a miss. Narvaez blocks, throws to first. Peterson touches the bag. Ball game over. It's a combined no-hitter for the Milwaukee Brewers. Corbin Burns and Josh Hader do the job here in Cleveland. Just the second no-hitter in franchise history, the first since April 15th, 1987, when Juan Nieves no-hit the Baltimore Orioles. Josh Hader and Corbin Burnes do the trick against the Indians tonight.
Corbin Burnes is joining us here as we reminisce on a historical night for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball club. And for you yourself, another dominant start from you. You're chasing a Cy Young Award as well, and so you're trying to go out there right now and just do your thing and be consistent like you have been all year. And I know you've gotten this question a lot already, but at what point last night did it kind of click in with you that, hey, I got a shot to do this?
Yeah, I think once we got through the sixth, I think when I looked up there and saw the pitch count was still, at a decent mark, I thought that was, going to be possible. We were just getting ready to go through the lineup for the third time, so it was going to be tough. Omar was calling a great game back there last night. Obviously the great play by Lokane and great plays on defense behind us helped us get it done. But, yeah, I think once we got through the sixth, maybe, was kind of when it came into mind. And once we got through seven, the pitch count was pretty high. I had to beg pretty hard for the eighth. So it would definitely have been tough to try to get out there and get the ninth.
It looked like you had started lobbying for the eighth inning before you were even coming off the mound after you got the final out in the seventh.
Yeah, once I got that punch out, I wanted it to be known that I was still good and wanted to go back out there.
We've talked a lot about your cutter and how dominant it's been over the course of this year, but the emergence of the curveball, I think specifically over this second half of the season, that's really turned into a big swing and miss pitch for you.
Yeah, the curveball just gives me a different speed, a different look to get them off the cutter and the slider. The cutter and slider, if you're out there looking for something hard moving away, you can hit either one. So for me, against right-handers, that just gives me the ability to kind of bounce the eyes, change eye level, slow things down, and then steal a strike early on. Lefties allows me to kind of steal a strike on the backside and get their eyes looking away, so I can run that cutter in. So it just gives me another depth, another option that I think is making the cutter and the slider even better.
Corbin, did you change your approach to their lineup second and third time through at all, or did you just stick with the original game plan? And did you see them make any adjustments at the plate?
No, that was pretty much, we stuck to the game plan all night. Something that we eventually wanted to get to was getting that sinker more in on right-handers, and we never really actually got to that because we didn't need to. They did start to make an adjustment a little bit. One I noticed most was Miles Straw after his first AB. He tried to close off and, try to punch something the other way. They were definitely up there fighting, trying to do the best they could to try to throw me off my rhythm. I think they kind of went through phases of, hey, let's get aggressive on it, swing early. Let's sit back a little bit. Let's get aggressive again. So they were doing what they could, but Omar did a great job of keeping them off balance.
There's always that one play. Lorenzo had the play to end the eighth inning, and I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that he was the one that made that play because of all the highlight reel plays he's made over the course of his career. What was your reaction off the bat when Owen Miller hit it, and what was your reaction once Lowe made the catch?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good pitch. It was a good curveball at the bottom of the zone, and Owen went down and got it and punched that thing to right center. And off the bat, I was like, it was hit pretty well. Had a little bit of air under it. Obviously just enough for Lokane to track it down. But when I turned around and saw him, he had a pretty good beat on it. I knew he was going to catch it. That's something that we're kind of accustomed to seeing Lowe out there is making those diving players or jumping on the wall and making plays. So he's one of the best defensive center fielders in the league for a reason.
You will certainly get more opportunities to hopefully have a complete game no-hitter at some point in time, but to share it with Josh and Omar, who, as you already mentioned, did such a great job behind the plate, but to share it with Josh, who I know you're close with and who has meant so much to this organization with what he's been able to do at the back part of games, and really when you think about this team in general and the way everybody has contributed, that has to be kind of special, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When Counts told me that I was done after the eighth inning, he said, hey, you're done and we're going to have Josh finishing off. And so that's obviously if there's one person you want to finish off your no-hitter, it's the best closer in the league and it's Josh Hader. So, there was no doubt in I think any of our minds in the dugout that Josh was going to come in and slam the door shut. And then we can go and celebrate and enjoy what we did happen to do out there.
Yeah, 16 total strikeouts, 14 from you, 2 from Josh. What was the aftermath like for you in terms of just letting it all sink in and understanding what had happened?
Yeah, it was crazy. Went in and texted my wife immediately and you know, she was like, you know, I always wondered where I was going to be with your first no-hitter, and obviously she would have loved to have been here, but, you know, she was at home watching it, and so she was excited, family was excited. You know, getting to go in there and share it with the teammates was obviously is you know special as well. This is a pretty special team, and I think what we've done so far this year has been pretty impressive, and you know I think we're only getting better.
Corbin, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
Well, that was a lot of fun. We certainly appreciate Corbin Burns for giving us the time on the show. Some other big news came out this week, and because of the no-hitter, it took us a while to get around to talking about it, but Ryan Braun made it official. He announced his retirement on Tuesday. He's going to have a ceremony in the final home game of the season, and boy, what a career for Ryan Braun. A guy that came up big in all the big moments for the Brewers over the years, such a clutch player, and just an incredible resume when it's all said and done. And I know I speak for everybody when I say that we are all grateful we got a chance to see that swing in American Family Field over the years. Just a tremendous, tremendous talent and a part of some of the biggest Brewers moments over the past couple of decades. A lot of fun to watch Ryan Braun up close. And we'll miss him, but I think he's going to be around quite a bit moving forward no matter what. We'll have more on the Ryan Braun retirement on next week's edition of Brewers on Tap. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been fun. What a week it's been for the Brewers. Hopefully we have postseason to be celebrating next week as well. Until we talk again, stay healthy, stay safe. Go Crew. I'm Lane Grindle. Brewers, Brewers, Brewers. Come on!